Gallery Podcast.
This is the National Gallery Podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. As parents around the country watch their little ones dress up in fake beards, tea towels and angel wings, we start this month with our own nativity scene. Christ's birth has inspired many great artists, but one of the most unusual depictions is by the 16th century artist Peter Bruegel the Elder. The Adoration of the King shows the Holy Family in the stable being visited by the three wise men, whose usual splendour has been replaced by bad skin and grotesque expressions. Art historian Carly Allen described the scene for Cathy Fitzgerald.
Jesus seems to be completely unnerved by this vision that's sort of lurching towards him, particularly the oldest king, Caspar, who's on his knees and thrusts his gift rather menacingly towards the baby and almost grimaces. He's got this lank, greasy hair that hangs in rat's tails and clings to his ears. His skin is very saggy. He's got 5 o'clock shadow, looks a little bit unwashed. So you definitely wouldn't want this person entering your personal space, and the baby feels the same way. He's recoiling, he's rejecting this visitor. Further back to the left, there's the second king, Melchior, who, although he looks rather regal in his red, his face just does not fit his robes. He again has got this rather sickly looking, sweaty face. He's struggling to keep his eyes open, his mouth is downturned, and he just looks a little bit like a sort of turtle appearing from a shell. And the figure of Joseph as well, Mary's husband, who we might expect to be standing in a protective way, perhaps looking lovingly towards this little family. He's being distracted. He's physically moving away, distancing himself from Mary and Jesus. And he's listening to somebody whispering in his ear quite conspiratorially. So we immediately start thinking, what else is going on in this picture?
And there's a real sense of menace to it as well, isn't it? Which is very unusual for a nativity, weapons in the background.
This does seem to be a very hostile place that Jesus is being born into. We see this almost fence of sharp weaponry that really adds to the claustrophobic space. There's no air to breathe in this painting, and we are completely enclosed by the bodies, the crowd, the throng, and these tall weapons. So what's Bruegel up to? But one suggestion, which would make a lot of sense, is that he is asking us to look at this scene of the birth of Christ through considering the later episodes in his life, so looking towards the end of his life, the violence of the passion and crucifixion. Down the central vertical line of the painting, we have a large halberd being held by a soldier. It sits directly above the figure of Mary and Jesus, and this cruciform shape created by the halberd does seem to suggest the shape of the cross on which Christ will be crucified. And even the detail of the spiked crown on Balthazar, the Black King, is reminiscent of the crown of thorns, perhaps, from scenes of the Passion. And perhaps we might feel that it is a very difficult picture to look at because it doesn't give us the details of the standard rendition that we expect, the heavenly angels, the bright star, the fabulous retinue of the kings and their horses. Perhaps this painting does just offer us something deeper, an opportunity to reflect on the true meaning of the Christmas story. And what we're given is this very vulnerable, naked baby who's born into a violent and hostile world. And Bruegel really seduces us. He draws us in principally with the quality of his paint. And there are passages all over this picture where we just want to delight in the way that he has manipulated oil paint, and he catches our attention that way and holds it so that we are then open to these different layers of meaning and moral messages.
Carly Allen. Bruegel's Adoration of the Kings is on display in Room 14, and if you're visiting the gallery this month, you might like to take a look at the website for details of all our seasonal activities. There's Christmas afternoon tea in the National Dining Rooms featuring mince pies and brandy cream, and music concerts every Friday evening. And on the 14th of December, there's a Christmas workshop. Get tips from artists and designers on card and gift making in a snowy setting, inspired by the Dutch artist Hendrik Haverkamp. For more information, see our website, www.nationalgallery.org.uk/Christmas. And now to Seduced by Art, Photography Past and Present, the gallery's first major exhibition devoted to photography. The exhibition traces the fascinating relationship between photography and fine art, and puts paintings, early photography, and works by contemporary photographers side by side. One of these contemporary photographers is Richard Learoyd. His highly detailed portrait of a young woman in a floral shirt, called Yasmin in Mary Quant, has been stopping visitors in their tracks. This large-scale photograph clearly owes a visual debt to the fine art tradition, but what's less obvious is that the process used to make it employs a piece of technology artists have experimented with since ancient times, a walk-in camera obscura. In his studio off London's Brick Lane, Richard Learoyd told Lear Caribbean how it works.
I prefer to think of it as just a big camera. That's the easiest way to describe it. That is essentially two rooms. There's a light side and a dark side with a lens in between. And you walk into the dark side of the room and there's a light projected onto the person who's in the light side of the room and you see their image upside down and the wrong way around. And you compose the picture in the dark looking at their projection. And then you shut the lens down so you can't see anymore. You put up a photographic material, in this case Ilfachrome or Cibachrome as it used to be called. You expose the picture with a large amount of flash and then you put it into a large processing machine and 18 minutes later, there's your picture.
And am I right in thinking that these are unique objects? You get the one object from it?
Yeah. By the nature of the process, the thing that you're looking at, the surface, the material that you're looking at in the gallery is the film material that the photograph's made on in the studio. There's no negative, there's no transparency, there's no interposing material between the two things. It's a direct positive material that is the film that's in the camera.
The fact of seeing the subject upside down, how does that affect the working process? Does that make it harder?
I think I've been doing it for so long, my brain flips it. I don't actually see it upside down. I do see it upside down, but I don't read it that way. I don't know how that works. It's just, I think if you spent 10 years in the dark looking at things, you get fed up of craning your neck, and eventually your brain does something. It's a trick, and you don't realise you're doing it. Sometimes I can't, and I get a stiff neck, but most of the time, it's about looking for very small things. You know, you're peering at a very brilliant but very dark image on a piece of white material, and you know I'm looking for a focus point in a picture, which is usually with a person, the meniscus of liquid on the bottom of somebody's eyelid, and the depth of field of the camera is probably 5 or 6 millimeters.
So it's that narrow.
Yeah, it's very narrow, so things move in and out of focus very quickly, and that's why, you know, the process of sitting for a photograph like this is probably more akin to sitting for a drawing or a painting than especially a modern photographic session where, you know, a photographer will click, 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 click. It's not like that. It's subtlety of movement and finding a plane of focus across somebody's face and across their body and creating a travel in the composition of the image. In the case of Yasmin, the focus moves down her eye to the edge of her nose and down her cheek, along the fabric of the collar and down to her hand. And those rivers, compositional rivers of focus, are what make the pictures intriguing.
Do you get quite a ghostly image on upside down on the back wall?
I can show you. Do you want to see?
Oh, yes, please.
I'll go first and make sure the light is on. So come in.
Okay.
So you can see the focus comes in very sharply and you need tiny movements on the person. But it's quite, your eyes adjust to the darkness.
And so when you put the paper up,
yeah,
that obviously happens in your incomplete darkness then.
Yeah, yeah, the paper's in that machine there. You close the lens down so it's completely dark in here, and you clip the paper onto this backboard like that. And you go out and press the button, and that's it.
And you have got to hope that there's no movement of your model in the meantime.
Yeah, well, we do things to ensure that that doesn't happen. You know, we've got clamps and markers and various other ways. You offer a resistance for people so they stay in the same place.
So is there quite a correspondence with early photography? I mean, do you have head clamps and things?
Yeah, we've got all sorts of clamps. it's got all the problems of large format photography. It has times by 50. It's the ultimate in analog expression. It's how you would have imagined photography to be if you were Fox Talbot in 1850. If you projected photography forward, you'd say, well, it will be like this. You know, you'll shine a light onto this material and, you know, the lenses will be incredibly sharp and the colour will be very beautiful and there'll be mirror-like surfaces. That's how people would have imagined photography, not as a load of ones and zeros on a screen. But, you know, everything comes to an end. This is the end. They've stopped making this material. I've bought enough for the rest of my career, however long that is. And then that's the end. Who knows?
Thanks to Richard Learoyd. If you'd like to see Yasmin in Mary Quant, you'll find her in Room 41, next to Anker's Madame Wattessier. And there are more of Richard's photographs on display in our current exhibition. Seduced by Art, Photography Past and Present runs until the 20th of January. Tickets are available from the gallery or online with a booking fee from the website. And now, if you've ever wished you could take home one of the National Gallery's masterpieces, we've got the next best thing. The gallery has teamed up with the specialist print and home interiors company Surface View to create not just same-size prints, but large-scale murals of the collection. Cathy Fitzgerald got a tour of the factory from Surface View's business development manager, Tom Pickford.
Just walked down into our factory, and this is where we produce all of our graphics. We've got five large format printing machines that are all roll-to-roll, and just behind us is our photographic press, which is actually one of the largest in Europe.
What can people get the National Gallery's paintings printed onto?
Well, here we're making canvas prints, murals, roller blinds, but we also create lampshades, ceramic tiles. Across the three factory sites that we have, we're producing a lot of different print technologies and creating different products for the National Gallery customers with that technology.
Which National Gallery paintings tend to go down well?
Certainly the portraits are very very popular. I think there's something about a face that people engage with. Having that as a large mural is really striking in a room. There's a great range of landscapes from Impressionist painters, Monets, and the Van Goghs even that we have are still very popular. George Stubbs' Whistle Jacket is another popular one. We're just running a Whistle Jacket canvas print at the moment, so that will be coming off the press shortly, so you can see how that looks.
So it's Whistle Jacket, which is Stubbs' incredible painting of a horse, but the size of your living room wall.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we start from about a metre square as a canvas print, but yeah, you can have them stretched at 3 metres by 3 metres. So the only thing we ask is that people check that they can actually get them through the door before they're ordered.
Have you had that happen?
We haven't had any returns because of it, no, but we've had people lift them in through windows from street level to get them in. Of course, for the murals, which can be much bigger, you know, they could be 10 metres wide, 20 metres wide. They're not shipped in one section, they're in sections and then they're applied onto a wall. So transportation's not such a problem, but the side of things that we're working on with the National Gallery tends to be interiors for either residential projects, for customers' own houses, or on a commercial scale, working in offices, in schools, in hospitals. Everything's bespoke, so you know, people can tell us what size they like and we'll do it.
Thanks to Tom Pickford. And you can find information about Surface View's prints and other products at www.nationalgallery.co.uk/surfaceview. And finally, if you're racking your brains for Christmas present ideas, don't forget the National Gallery's shop. Cathy spoke to buyer Nathaniel Mobbs and began by asking which gifts our smallest visitors are coveting this season. What would a young Nathaniel have pestered his parents for?
I think I definitely have my eye on the Noah's Ark in wood that we have. It comes with 11 different sets of animals. It's beautifully crafted, so a really special present. We also have a range of presents based around Rousseau's surprised tiger painting, which always really captures the children's imaginations. We've got everything from roaring tiger umbrellas to various puzzles and games.
There's a bright orange tiger purse down here as well.
Yes, that's a really great product which was developed exclusively for us. It's a really cute little item.
And this is something for them to come and have a look at, obviously, after they've admired Rousseau's exquisite brushwork.
Yes, absolutely. It is a painting that really seems to appeal to them and capture their imagination. And we do find quite often groups of children sat around looking at it, admiring the work.
And how about for adults? What have you got for older visitors?
We have a delicious art range of products, which really captures the connection between the enjoyment of art and food.
How does that work? That sounds like an excuse for eating chocolate.
Eating chocolate and drinking wine, yes, I think so. We have a red and white wine and also a champagne, which are all produced by Rothschild's Wines. They feature images from the gallery on the labels, and it's a really nice collaboration. We also have bars of chocolate and a fancy fudge and marzipan selection box.
And when do you normally do your Christmas shopping?
I have to say I am a bit of a last-minute person. It is quite handy having the shop as a resource.
So does that mean everybody in your family is going to get National Gallery Christmas presents?
Yes, I think they're used to it.
Nathaniel Mobbs. If you're visiting this month, we're open every day except the 24th to the 26th of December. 10 till 6 daily until 9 on Fridays. And you can find out all about Christmas at the gallery, plus shop for gifts online, at www.nationalgallery.org.uk/Christmas. That's it for this episode. Until the new year, goodbye.